Welcome to Respect Life Radio. My name is Deacon Jeff Bennett with Catholic Charities of the Archdiocese of Denver. Remember, you can listen to all of our shows at respectliferadio.com. Today, our special guest is Father Robert Sirico. He's president of the Acton Institute. And Father, thank you for taking time to join us today.
I'm delighted to be with you. Thank you.
Can you explain to people what the Acton Institute is and what it does? I mean, I've been following it for quite a while, and I just think it's such a valuable resource. But I want other people to know what you're doing and how they can kind of tap into that.
Sure. Well, I guess the word think tank is what you could think of it as. It's kind of like a university without, you know, having a university. It's focused on the intersection of morality, theology, economics, human freedom. It's really the question of the relationship between liberty and the truth of who human beings are. And I know that sounds very abstract, because then we get into questions of policy and welfare reform and free trade and just wages and a whole plethora of other kinds of issues that deal with economic questions and day-to-day life. And a lot of this comes out of Catholic natural law thinking, even though the organization itself isn't a Catholic organization as such. It's an ecumenical effort to understand moral responsibility in the market economy. And that's kind of the big picture. The best thing for somebody to do is to go to acton.org, which is our website, and look at the various conferences and books and the bookstore that we have there and films that are available that you can watch on YouTube and things like that. And like everybody else, we're being challenged with new ways of doing what we do.
Right.
Our message isn't going to change. Our mission isn't going to change. But the way in which we do it is going to change and has already begun to change.
Well, and, you know, talking about that is, you know, the real reason we're talking today. You know, we have this global pandemic that hopefully we're coming out of. We see some signs that are looking promising. Mm-hmm. But I'd like you to talk about how, you know, how do we associate, you know, worrying about our health without throwing the economy under the bus, or, you know, just trying to, like, totally getting rid of it, all because of a fear of death. How do we integrate the two? Because I know that's a lot of what you guys look at, right? How does the economy play in our everyday life, and how is it important, right?
Right. That's exactly what we do. Here's the way I see it. There are, in reaction to almost anything, but I think the pandemic is a great illustration on stilts.
Yeah.
There are two ways in which you can react to it. It's like, you know, the old saying, to a hammer, everything is a nail. And this is what happens.
Yep.
In academia. It has happened in the church. And now it's happening in society, where you have different competencies, different expertise. So let's say in this case, it's the expertise of science, immunology, all of that, up against the reality of a market economy and how people sustain their lives, how we pay our bills, what we do with our time and all the rest of that, and our faith. And the extremes that people can take in any of these three categories is that the only thing that matters is the science and the models. Certainly that matters, but it's not the only thing that matters, because human beings aren't just patients. Human beings aren't just bags of flesh. They're also people in communities. They're also transcendent beings that have an intrinsic dignity and relationship with other people and with God. Likewise, in the church, you know, you have people who become so extreme in their piety. This time around, we've mostly seen it with megachurch pastors saying, well, it doesn't matter. We can speak the word against it. It's going to go away. And then we hear that these people are now have the virus.
Right.
People in the economic sphere rightly point out that if you don't have an economy, you don't have food, you don't have life. But of course, the economy isn't the only consideration. The economy exists for people, not people for the economy. So it's what I think is needed that we balance these spheres of competency so that they are informing each other rather than any one taking over the whole. And I think the particular problem we have right now is that government has become so centralized in so many ways. There's so much that the state says we can and can't do. And I'm not talking about in this pandemic. I'm talking about before it. The regulatory apparatus that now can be felt in ways that we wouldn't have noticed before, mm-hmm. but now are felt because we can't have ventilators. If you don't meet certain specifications and have certain approvals from certain health bureaucracies, you can't make a ventilator. You can't even make a face mask. And when that becomes so centralized, then the whole of the economy, the whole of our lives become wrapped up in it, and even our faith, because now our churches are closed down, and even hospitals are not permitting, some hospitals are not permitting visits from priests for people in extremis. And this is the mistake of treating a patient as though they were just a patient and not a total human being. So this is, I'm sorry to have gone into that whole thing, but this is the whole big picture of, in my estimation, what we're facing and the confusion of the spheres of authority or the levels of governance in society.
No, I think it's a good point, right? You can't make a cocktail and leave two of the ingredients out and expect it to be what you thought it was going to be.
Right.
I mean, it's almost like, you know, you hear somebody talk about, you know, how bad their marriage is, and you're going to fix it based on just what they say without listening to the other side and realizing
right.
there's two
right.
sides of this, right?
Yes. I can tell you've done marriage counseling.
Well, being married, I know how wrong I am. That if actually people were to listen to me, they'd get a totally wrong picture of what's actually happening. So, unfortunately, it's the reality of it. But, you know, you made a really good point, right? The economy exists for the people.
Right.
So to shut that down, and, you know, there's a dignity in work. There's it's important for our livelihood. You know, really is almost like you can't see the forest from the trees at that point. You're
exactly.
making a huge mistake, aren't you?
Yeah, and you know, you just think of it as economics, but it's psychology. I mean, people who aren't working aren't feeling very good about themselves. They're not contributing to the community as a whole, and they know it. They're not able to save for their family and their well-being, which creates all kinds of fear and psychological trauma, and all of this plays into one's immune system. You know, I mean, you could go on and on of the interconnectedness. You know, this is why, if I may just pause for a theological note here.
No, that'd be great.
This is why the incarnation of Christ teaches us so much, that what affects human redemption is not just a word, an abstract word from heaven, even though there is the Logos, but also that word becomes flesh and dwells among us. And this is what pervades Catholic sensibility of our theology, of our prayer, of our sacraments, of everything we are, is that God speaks to us and offers his grace in all of human circumstances, all of human life, and that he came to redeem us not from outside our world, but from inside our world. And this integrated approach, what in modern secular society is called a holistic approach, needs to be applied to society itself.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great point. It's one I hadn't even thought of. And it really does. Everything needs to be integrated. And then the problem is, right, you make these decisions without really looking at the consequences of what you're doing, especially when it comes to economy. And then all of a
right.
sudden, you're going to do a stimulus package, right? You're going to throw money at the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, there would be a lot of problems I would have loved to have thrown money at if I knew they were going to fix it. But it really doesn't fix it, does it?
No, in fact, it throws things off. It really does, because the indiscriminate nature of the thing. I mean, I understand the intention, but the way in which they went about this is resulting already, and I think as we go down the line, we're going to see many, many more problems, because you're, in effect, incentivizing people not to work, because not a lot of jobs are going to pay you $600 a week plus the unemployment benefit, right?
Right.
So you say, okay, well, and there are a number of restaurants who don't have work for people to do, but have people they have on their payrolls. I'm talking now not so much about the unemployment, but the loans to small businesses and churches, by the way. My parish and the Acton Institute did not take those loans. We figured, you know, this is a crisis. We've all got to tighten our belts. We've got to help one another. This builds community, these intangibles. And by throwing money at it, who is going to pay for this? That's the first question. Of course, it's going to be your kids and your kids' kids.
That's right.
And then the other problem is, why did we immediately think of the central government being the first to act? What would have happened had we said, okay, we determined we need a $4 trillion, and this looks like it's going to go up to $5 trillion just for the stimulus package?
Yep.
Not to mention the other $23 trillion that we already have as a deficit. Okay, let's leave that to the side for a moment. Sorry. But what if we had said, okay, $4 trillion, how about if we give every business, every man, every woman a tax holiday for the next year?
Yep.
Businesses don't pay taxes. Now, you say, well, there are some people who don't pay taxes anyway. They're too poor. Okay, so then we give them some kind of credit, some kind of assistance. We direct something to them so that they're, you know. But what this would have done, you talk about stimulating an economy, taking the burden off of businesses of the enormity of taxes. And then the other thing, and it's already happening because the reality of this crisis is pushing it, the regulatory stuff. They are removing regulations on the production, for instance, of hand sanitizers. You know that there are regulations, medical regulations on that.
I would have never guessed.
Yes. Now distilleries can produce. Here in Grand Rapids, we have a number of distilleries that are producing thousands and thousands of gallons of hand sanitizer. Same thing with the masks. Same thing with the licensing that prohibits doctors in one state to work in another state. All of these things that inhibit the economy normally are having to be repealed. And I won't even get into the development of drugs and things like that because of the FDA's onerous and burdensome regulatory procedures. That we could have had a lot of these drugs available long ago, but the regulatory process inhibited them. And this could go on and on and on, that what we need is a society that engages everyone in problem solving, but regulations and taxation and all the rest of it and the dominance of the political society, the political element of society, keeps the elite in control and doesn't involve the intelligence of the community as a whole.
Well, and that's exactly what they like. Right? I mean, I always refer to this as socialism light, the way they've kind of, you know, they dictate, right? The heck with subsidiarity, where let's make
right,
the local
exactly.
communities decide what's best for the communities. Let's
right.
let's just do a blanket thing and everybody's going to live by it.
Right, right. I don't think it's socialism light anymore.
No. No, I was trying to be kind, but you know, you have people yeah. that are promoting this, you know, promote socialism, and I said, if you like what's going on, where the government tells you what to do, when to do, and how you can do it, and oh, by the way, there's shortages and all these other things, then right. you know, that'll give you a taste of what you're talking about. But I think I think your institute does a good job, and you do have a lot of videos on YouTube, which I would encourage people. To look up, just look under Father Sirico. Has a lot of really good videos talking about this and other economic things. How do you think the church has handled this?
I can't say that this has been our proudest moment. At least let me say this with regard to the institutional church.
Yes, that's what I mean, yeah.
Okay, because my impression now, I'm looking at the big picture. The message, what is the message of the Catholic Church? Closed temporarily.
Yeah. Yeah. We're supposed to be a light in the dark world. Sorry, we didn't pay our electric bill.
Right. This kind of thing. Formal letters that say all the right things, you know, and, you know. But in point of fact, who has been responding? It's been pastors, which should always be the first responders, but younger pastors. What I mean by that is, and that's owing both to their evangelical sensibility. The younger guys are more evangelical and orthodox and zealous, and their technological prowess. So they're more familiar with how to use an iPhone and take here I am saying a video, a recording of it, and they know how to put it online. These are the guys. There's one priest I knew when he was a seminarian. He's in Providence, Rhode Island, Giacomo Capaverdi. Every prayer he prays, his whole office is prayed online. Adoration of the Blessed Sacrament, devotion, rosary, mass, preaching, Bible study, even cappuccino with Giacomo. he just sits there and he's having a cappuccino and he's talking to you on the thing, and then you can kind of write in your questions or your comments. These kinds of actions that are taking place all over the country, informally, not with anybody, working around the directives. Now, fortunately, in my diocese, we're allowed to have the churches open. It'd be unpardonable if we couldn't keep our doors open. What's the problem with that? So you have somebody go in there every hour and wipe down. It's not like, you know, and we've been hearing confessions also in our parish. But I can't have adoration. I can't do a mass, a public mass. This is terrible. We had to fight to get into the hospital to be able to minister to the dying. So I think the church, not to say that they didn't have a role and shouldn't have been a big player in how to, mitigate the contagion, but they need to be out in front and give a powerful public presence and communicating with people. And we in my parish, we've had almost not stopped anything. I mean, gathering together, yes, but we've had two parish town hall meetings on Zoom.
Right.
Our school is still operating. Our class, our high school class will graduate this year. The teachers have been great. We've had, our youth leader had a scavenger hunt with about 40 kids on Google Meeting or whatever it's called, Classroom. Go get a mop. Who can be the first one to get a mop handle? Who can be, you know, doing this whole thing? So there are creative ways of engaging people. And then there are the official letters.
Yes, yes. I get a lot of emails, a lot of those. But, you know, there's a book I read.
A lot of people very angry about this.
Yeah, well, I've gotten phone calls. I've had people talk to me. You know, there's a book I read many years ago. It's, you know, how the Catholic Church basically created Western civilization. And one of those things was the hospitals.
Right.
And yet we're running from this like we're afraid of it when we have Christ. What are we afraid of?
Right. Right. Which isn't to say we shouldn't take precautions, but
right.
You know, we take risks every day for a lot of things and a lot of things that are a lot less risk-worthy than the salvation of an immortal soul.
Yeah, and, you know, St. Padre Pio talks about that, right? Mm-hmm. The body's great, but the most important thing you got is your soul. Kind of paraphrasing him, he's much better than I, but it's almost like we've forgotten about that. Even, you know, whether it's, you know, we wouldn't expect our governments to get it, but, you know, when they're shutting down an economy and, you know, one of the byproducts of it is I'm hearing more and more issues with domestic violence. I'm hearing more and more pornography use. So, I mean, we haven't done a lot of good things. I mean, a lot of people are taking this and taking it even worse, and that's a problem.
Yeah, this is what, you know, in the confessions I've heard, the thing I keep saying to people is, you know, this is great, a great stress. This is a great dark moment. But hidden under it, there is an offer of greater sanctity, greater grace. If you can just get through, penetrate that darkness, you'll see the light. Because what we can learn is solitude. We can learn prayer. We can learn the importance of having a schedule that we dictate, not that's dictated to us. This is one of the things I've been emphasizing to people, is create a schedule, impose a schedule on yourself. So you don't have to be anywhere at any given time. You can put down on your calendar, here is what I'm going to do at this time. Here's the virtue I'm going to work on this day. Mm-hmm. And by golly, get up, shower, make your bed, and get dressed. You know, put on some nice clothes so the dog will see you. That's okay. You know, we just have to keep a forward-looking thing and take control of this.
Well, you know, it's not unlike, you know, if you don't feel good, if you lay around in your pajamas all day, you never feel good all day. You take a shower, yeah, and you get dressed, it's almost, yeah, like, hey, I'm starting to feel better. It's a psychological thing.
You know, I feel I'm guilty if I stay in bed till 7:30, which I almost genetically can't do.
I'm with you.
But if I find myself in bed that late, I just feel like I got to go to confession. I'm half joking there.
Yeah, yeah, no, but I understand what you mean, right? It's almost like, you know, I get up at like 4 most mornings, and so half the day's shot. If I slept that long, I'd feel like, oh my gosh, yeah, it's lunchtime.
Right, right.
You know, the other thing, you know, not only creating a plan, I think learning a lesson from this, right? We just can't, you know, go by and let the world, and we're just world go by and we're just a spectator. I mean, that's why I think your institute is so important. We need to know about economics and the importance of an economy, and that it's there for the people. Economy in itself isn't bad. We just, it has a purpose to give us a dignity and to help us raise our level. Because isn't it true in a real world, right? Those that are, you know, more affluent have less health issues.
Yeah, sure, because you have more options. You can do things. Let me just nuance what you said. The economy isn't just for people.
Mm-hmm.
It's by people.
Yeah, right. You're right.
You know, the fact that we're placed in the condition of, in the context of limitation. So we're limited in time, and we're limited in resources. That is what gives rise to economics. If we didn't have any limitation of our time, our life, or resources, there would be no prices for anything. There would be no buying and selling. We'd just have everything we'd ever need. There wouldn't be any limitation. Prices arise out of the reality of limitation. And so this side of heaven, will there be an economy in heaven? No, not in that sense. There'll be a plan in heaven, you know,
right,
the eternal economy of salvation. But that's not economics. That's not management of time and resources. So if economics is bad, if the things that an economy produce are bad, it's bad because our values are wrong, not because the system is wrong. It's that we have chosen wrong.
Yeah, and I think it's a good point, right? We don't just parachute into an economy.
Right.
And all of a sudden, we just have to kind of live with it, and we don't have a choice.
Right.
You know, the
emerges.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And for the benefit of the people, to help us. But you got to be ruled by the virtues. You got to have a moral compass, or otherwise it's going to go bad. I mean, one of the issues that we see, and we only have a couple minutes left, really, is, you know, we have a world of dependency already. Right. Where, and you kind of mentioned it when we were talking about, you know, people getting unemployment. We don't want to create a dependent society. We want independence. We want people to go out and do stuff. So they're going to have to fight. Some people are going to have to fight themselves to not just be comfortable getting another handout from the government.
Right. To limit ourselves, to demand from ourselves a greater good. I mean, morality is not easy, right?
If it was, everybody would be doing it, right?
Right, right. If morality was just our lifestyle, we'd all be saints. It has to be above. We have to be called beyond. And that's the engagement of our intellect and our reason, that we know what is right and we choose to do it, at least most of the time.
Yes.
You know, and then when we don't, then we acknowledge that reality, we repent of it, and we start all over again.
Right. And, you know, I think, you know, we're talking about the moral foundation of our society. I don't know what they're doing in Michigan, although I hear you can't even plant, you know, flowers. But here in Colorado,
the worst governor.
Yeah, here in Colorado, we've decided that pot shops, alcohol, so liquor stores, abortion clinics, and gun shops are more important than churches.
Yeah. No, it's very true. I just published an article. I think it just went online today in the American Conservative, Religion as an Essential Service. And I kind of talk about the history of the hospital, as you said earlier there. But yeah, no, it's we have become so secularized that we've just dismissed the role and importance of transcendence, of religion, of God, of which means value of our lives, a sense of dignity.
Well, I can't thank you enough, Father, for coming on. We got about 30 seconds to go, but you know, can you remind people of your webpage and the Acton Institute again?
Sure, it's Acton, ACTON.org, and there's a ton of stuff on there, especially if you've got a little extra time to watch a few videos or read some articles. I think you'll find it a very interesting world and a different perspective.
Well, and I can't agree with you more. I would encourage everybody to go on there because we need to know about this stuff and how our faith integrates into the society and the world in which we live, and you guys do an excellent job of that. Father, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. God bless you.